back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on what's left of this Friday morning. Joining us now on the line, we do this every Friday, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott of Josephine. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. Good to be with you and glad to be back in South Alabama after several trips to Montgomery this week.
So, well, let's talk about contract review, a couple storylines there. Anything we need to know?
Yeah, you know, Senator Dan Roberts from Mountain Brook chairs that committee, and Chris Pringle and Dan Roberts and I are usually the guys there each and every time to look over these contracts. And the statute basically says that the contracts that the executive branch agencies sign for services have to come through this panel, or if you will, this committee, to look at them and see if there are any questions about them. The legislature provides some oversight, if you will. We can delay the execution of those contracts up to 45 days while we look at that. And boy, did we do that yesterday. There were every single solitary contract that the Board of Education, the State Board of Education brought, was listed as a sole source contract, as in this is the only vendor that can provide it. We didn't even try to RFP it, request for a proposal, send it out for bid. And the RFP process exists for, you know, so we can have some competition and get the best deal for taxpayers. So anytime we see sole source contracts like that, we have lots of questions about them and why they're sole source. And while, you know, it's certainly legal to have a sole source contract, it's certainly discouraged as well. And yesterday we took the step to hold absolutely every one of those contracts and did that for a number of other boards and agencies as well, just trying to make sure we're getting the best bang for the buck for the taxpayers.
The frustration is, though, in 45 days or whenever, I mean, they just go right on ahead. They just, it's like a speed bump almost.
It is, and it is a frustration. I mean, this is an executive branch agency, and what we're trying to do here is provide some oversight. The governor signs a ton of contracts, you can only imagine. And so what we're doing is screening some of those for her. Sometimes she likes it and sometimes she doesn't. But we are trying to put a little red flag on them and say, hey, governor, you may well look at this. And, of course, she has her representatives in the room while we're going through and asking some of those questions. And by and large, I've seen that the governor's office is certainly respectful of what the legislature is asking and respects our work on that committee.
Yeah, well, just in general, though, philosophically, like, you know, we think the legislature sort of is like Congress, and even Congress, Senator, I mean, I think their oversight role is way exaggerated. I mean, you're an oversight committee chairman. You're on Fox News a lot if you're a Republican, or on everywhere else if you're a Democrat. And there's not much they can do either. But, like, you always hear this. I heard so Quinn Hillier the other day, like, talking about the VA saga and how the legislature needs to exercise its role of oversight or whatever. But you don't really have – the legislature does not have, like, the oversight like we think, like even Congress does with subpoena power and whatnot.
You're correct. I mean, it is a limited role, and that to some extent is by design. I mean, the executive branch has the authority of executing the functions of government, and there's a lot of it. And I think it's reasonable to say, you know, the governor herself or even the administration is oftentimes not aware of all of the bureaucracy that is just churning day in and day out. And so what we try to do on that committee is to provide limited, and you're correct, limited oversight, and to keep the bureaucracy in check and to keep it honest, because it is all too often just easy to say, oh, we'd like this vendor and they do a good job and it's only this, you know, much, you know, increase, and we'll just rock and roll and see if we can get it through committee and just move on and get it signed and keep going. And that's we need to be more efficient than that. There's no question about it. But I will say where the authority does come in, both in Congress and in the state legislature, is at the end of the day, we set the budgets. And if you get an agency that's noncompliant, they can feel it in their budget. And if they're not doing something that we want them to do, we can change the law and how they promulgate rules, whether or not they have to go through the rulemaking process. There are all kinds of different things. I've had two issues this summer alone Jeff, where I've encouraged a rule change or relooking at a rule. It hasn't occurred. I've sent over draft legislation, and lo and behold, the agency has changed its mind and decided to look at it a different way. And so those are the tools we have in our toolbox. They're limited, and oftentimes they can be seen as punitive, but they're powerful nonetheless.
Yeah, and but how often do you say, well, okay, well, you're not going to do what we tell you to, or cut your budget, or you were changing the law, and then the governor who is over that agency that seems to be playing fast and loose is going to sign it into law, right? I mean, they play games here, and that's, I think that's a frustration, at least for me personally, but probably a lot of my listeners, is just how these agencies have so much power, and it's these unelected bureaucrats.
Well, like it or not, I have found myself in a position where a lot of those agencies and the boards and everybody else looks at me and goes, oh gosh, here comes that Elliot guy. You know, what, you know, it's such a pain, you know, I gotta go explain this to him, or I may as well head this off. That's a position I don't mind being in, because I'm as unexciting as it is, I am a good government and efficient government champion, and I stay on them. And so, you know, you see things where we have, in fact, and they're limited, but cut the budget for some folks. And you see instances where we have filed legislation or threatened to file legislation, we'll change the process and then get the compliance or that we're seeking. And so those are certainly tools we can use and have used. Now, everybody doesn't operate that well, that way, as you well know. And my colleagues don't operate that well, but that way. But sometimes being seen as the guy that is willing to do that is enough to affect the change you need to without actually having to do it.
Well, I mean, at worst, they are at minimum, they're, well, crap, you're right. Here comes that Elliot guy. We better go call our hired gun go-to lobbyist and tell him to get ready. Here comes trouble. And then, I mean, well, this is what we saw, guys, all session. I'm telling you, I'd be in the hallways, and there would be everybody sitting in the media, sitting their hair on fire over gambling or something, and the talk in the hallways would be like, it would be you and the occupational licensing stuff, or it would be, oh man, they're going to make us start labeling seafood, or, I mean, you just, like, there's at times would be a disconnect from what was really, what seemed to be the most important thing. And when the state would get in place and try to make some changes and do something, like, all of a sudden that becomes like all hands on deck. It's really remarkable to watch.
Well, it is, and you're pushing back against that bureaucracy, and it doesn't like it. And so what does it do? It goes and it hires lobbyists, and you got to love the ability for the bureaucracy to hire its own lobbyists.
That is crazy, right? Guys, think about this. They are the government, your tax dollars, goes and they find, like, and there's some elite caliber lobbyists in Montgomery that you and I couldn't hire, right? And this is what they do. They go and hire these big names, and they really work the, and they essentially work leadership, but they're pounding on your door. You watch it. It is remarkable that your tax dollars are being used to lobby government.
It's offensive. There's no other way to put it. And it is hard. It is hard. And you saw that last year. You know, good government is hard. The insatiable creep of bureaucracy to have more money, more power, more authority is hard to overcome, especially when they're spending the taxpayer dollar to advocate on the bureaucracy's own, behalf. And it's one of those things that just takes constant pressure. But we're making headway. I mean, I'm not upset about it. I'm actually pretty encouraged. You watch the actions of Contract Review Committee that is constantly pushing back on these folks. You look at the actions of the Sunset Committee under the direction of Senator Will Barfoot and Representative Marjorie Wilcox, and they've got some bang-up members, Bubba Underwood, Keith Kelly, that are just, you know, on these folks, paying attention to how well these boards are running or not running, and are really staying on. You see a lot of drama about that. And that's not fun, exciting, sexy stuff. It's just good government, but they're making progress. And you see contracts changing and administrative functions of boards moving to different places, and these executive directors getting fired or terminated. I mean, there's a lot moving. There's a lot going on. There's headway being.
Yeah, and they're not totally dismissive of the legislature, but about it had to be 2 years ago. It had to be the middle of COVID, so probably longer than that. When, do you remember the effort, and maybe you were a part of it, to give the legislature the ability to call itself into session?
Yeah.
And just how people lost, especially the executive branch, lost their damn minds. Todd Stacey and I got into it on air about that, and this is his belief, and I see it just the opposite, that the legislature has so much power, and the legislature is the all-powerful branch of government, and this would just totally undermine the balance of power if you gave the Alabama legislature the ability to call itself into power, into session. And that's not true at all. The only thing that you guys have that gives you, I think, obviously the traditional power to purse string and all that, but you're able to override a gubernatorial veto with a simple majority. I mean, that's it, right? What you say, guys, generally, what you guys in the legislature generally goes. However, back to this, though, I don't think the balance is what the balance is. But I don't think that calling yourself into session or anything would give you any undue advantage. I mean, the governor still is where things really happen.
I certainly would agree with that. And I was part of that effort, especially as it related to COVID and shutdowns and things of that nature. I think the important thing to realize that as that bill matriculated and moved through the process, there was a huge hurdle to get over in the number of legislators that had to agree that we needed to come back into session. It was going to be for an emergency in order to reach that threshold. And so it's not like, hey, we decided we want to do something, rinky-dink here, and all of us, need a trip to Montgomery or something like that. Not far from it. It was going to have to be some sort of serious emergency that was going to require the legislature to come back into session. And frankly, an instance where the governor didn't want to call us back into session, which was probably, going to be one of the reasons we needed to come back into session, because the governor wasn't doing something that needed to be done. And so that process really needed to go through, but you're correct. The governor did not like that. And then, of course, the lobbying entities, that professional political class sure didn't like it.
Well, and now that we've sort of had a time for emotions to cool off, and we're not as wrapped up in the COVID stuff. I mean, that was really kind of that was a perilous time, because there was just and things are still the way they are. I mean, we've made some subtle changes, right? But that the executive branch would have so much power and not have any oversight. Well, what if you have, Senator, a Robert Bentley situation where the legislature's not in session, and it's not in session until the next year, and there's just something wrong going on in the governor's office, and you can't call your... I mean, is this the way other states... when y'all were trying to do this, did you look at other states? Can the legislature do things? Or are you just stuck with a potential corrupt governor until the next session?
Yeah, we certainly looked at other states. There, and everybody does it differently, no question about it. And there are some states with the capacity to do that. What you find is really a different level of urgency when there's a problem versus when there's not a problem, right? There's not a problem right now. Everything's functioning, fairly well. There's not a crisis. And so, we've got joint, interim committees that are meeting throughout the off season, if you will. But there's no urgency to get that done right now. And so you don't see it getting pushed. However, obviously when there was COVID, or when you had a Bentley situation or something like that, there was certainly more urgency to get in and take care of it. Look, during COVID, we abandoned our principles. No question about it. The government put people out of business. The government locked people up. The government, forced our children out of school. It was, I can't.
Closed churches,
closed beaches, people's private property. This governor said you can't go in your front yard because it happens to be a beach. It's probably one of the healthiest places to be. There were some ludicrous decisions that were made out of fear and because we abandoned our principles. And those are the types of situations that would and need, we should, and we need the ability to call ourselves back into session.
Well, I mean, and I know we're beating up on the governor again, as sometimes we do during this segment, but there was sort of this, this seems to be the case even for some of your colleagues and probably even you at some point, but they just can't wait till the legislature calls it, signing dies and goes out of session. It's like, in some ways, you watch this and it's just like trying to run down the clock, right? They're just on pins and needles until the clock runs out and those guys go home and we can get a breather here. Now, like last session, you just felt it was like, oh God, they're going to pass a stupid gambling bill. This cannot end soon enough. But like, that's how it is usually always for a lot of what you see in Montgomery. I think you and I have even talked about this before. They are just trying to run down the clock and get out of town.
That's true. And it is because oftentimes they like the status quo. They don't like folks like me up there causing a ruckus or looking under rocks or trying to figure out, you know, hey, is somebody, you know, somebody, you know, getting a contract they shouldn't get, or is this the most efficient way to do things? They don't like that. They want to be left alone and continue to do their little thing. So they don't like us being there. I'll tell you one thing though, if we end up in a situation where, Kamala Harris gets elected president, we're going to need to have a special session on immigration. And that's going to need to happen in November, in my opinion.
Whoa, I hope that's not necessary. Elaborate on that real quick.
I think we need, if she gets elected president, we need to get moving quickly on a special session to deal with this immigration, because it's not going to get any better.
We're talking revisiting HB 56, right?
We're talking a slew of 6, 8, 10 different pieces of legislation that have broad support in both the House and the Senate to get ahead of some of the continued missteps of the Biden-Harris administration on immigration policy. And listen, I hope it's all for naught. I hope we never have to do that. I hope President Trump gets elected here inside of a month. And you know, and I can spend November worried about Thanksgiving and traveling to my in-laws. But if not, I'll be the first one saying we need to get into a special session and we need to be ready to go.
Senator, we always appreciate your time. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. Enjoy your weekend.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. But honey, now I